before him, from how frustrated he often seemed. I know far too much about Reed Alexander and his seduction capabilities. Not wanting a full accounting of just how critically I screwed up by not taking her from him last fall, I have no plans to ask her about their involvement. It has no bearing on what I think of her. It has no bearing on us. "I wish you were here," she says finally, her lower lip jutting out so slightly I might be imagining it. I run my fingers across it on the screen, which she can't see me do. "I will be, in a week," she groans. "Too long." I laugh softly. "I agree." A faint scratching comes from my closed bedroom door. "Go away, Noodles," I call. Kara's cat is usually asleep at the foot of her bed at 1 a.m., not wandering around the house scratching on random closed doors. Then my doorknob turns, the door opening a sliver before a small face appears.
"Daddy?"
"I have a visitor," I say into the tiny camera at the top of my screen, pushing the laptop onto the bed and padding across the room. "Kara, what are you doing up?" I open the door and she latches onto me, impeded only by the stuffed rabbit clenched in one fist. Grasping her under the arms, I lift her and settle her in my arms. She sniffles and buries her face in my neck. "Bad dream?" I ask, and she nods, sniffling a little harder.
"Can I sleep with you?"
A hiccup follows this muffled request. Emma coughs lightly, the sound coming through the laptop speakers with a scratchy unevenness, and Kara's head pops up.
"Who's that?"
"I'm talking to Emma," I say. "Let's get you back to bed." She turns her head back and forth mulishly, her dark eyes intent.
"I want to talk to Emma, too."
Great. Wrestling Kara back into her bed could take me half an hour. She'll want to tell me her entire nightmare, and she's quite the dramatic narrator. I fully suspect she adds details as she goes along just to enhance the story. And then the request for water. The request for a kiss. The need to be accompanied to the bathroom. The checking for monsters in her closet, under her bed, and behind her draperies. Another kiss. I love my daughter, but crap! What timing? I walk over and pick up the laptop with my free hand, turning it towards Kara and myself. "I might as well let you go," I tell Emma. "This could take a little while."
"Hi, Emma," Kara says,
posing for the camera. Horrible nightmare forgotten. She's used to conversing with me this way when I'm away from home and she's with Bryn or Cassie.
"This is Bunny."
She holds the rabbit in front of the webcam. I'm sure all Emma can see is a screen full of worn blue fur.
"Oh, well, hello there, Bunny. Are you by any chance a turtle?"
Kara giggles, snatching Bunny to her chest and replacing the stuffed toy with her own face.
"No."
"A giraffe, maybe?"
"No."
"A doggy?"
"No, no, no."
"Well, I'm stumped. What kind of animal has a name like that?"
"A bunny."
Kara's dissolving into a fit of laughter, and I can't help laughing along. She turns to me and points to my bed.
"Sit, Daddy."
I sit with a sigh, torn between shock and elation at Emma's ability to switch gears. 5 minutes ago, I was whispering rather wicked details of what I wanted to do to her, and if the look on her face was any indication, she was having no problem following along. And now she's charming my daughter. Kara begins to get sleepy quickly, slumping into my lap a short time later, curled around Bunny. It's inching closer to 2 a.m. I'm gonna go put her back down and hope she stays down. Same time tomorrow?
Earlier tomorrow, she promises. Good night, Graham.
Good night, Emma.
See you soon.
She signs off and the screen goes black. Ah, God. My life has become more complicated than I ever imagined it could be. I had no real idea what I was doing to myself when I decided to take on parenthood. To cope, I made adjustments I thought I could manage, like foregoing close romantic entanglements. At first, nothing could have been easier, because I was still in love with Zoe. Once I was finally over her, I realized I'd also grown up, filled out. Girls on campus watched me with shameless curiosity and signaled uncomplicated desires, and my refusals to share any shred of personal information only amplified their interest. I didn't particularly care if they liked my no-strings position or not. A few drew lines in the sand, and I simply walked away. I never lied to anyone. I never promised anything. I never wanted anything more from anyone. Until Emma. The friendship we developed was unlike any relationship I've ever had. So easy. So companionable. But that physical pull was there, too, from the first moment I saw her. I refused to believe I was falling for a 17-year-old girl, and I fought it hard. The first time I kissed her, uncovered feelings so compelling that they tumbled over into protectiveness. The resolve came naturally. I wouldn't touch her, beyond what we'd already done, until she was a legal adult, until she specifically asked me to. For the first time since Zoe, my guard was down, which was exactly why that photo of Reed and Emma sliced right through me.
Emma. The prom is a nightmare. While it's not exactly Carrie, it's no High School Musical 3 either. When Marcus called to tell me he still wanted me to accompany him to his prom, I swallowed back cliched reassurances. It's not you, it's me. We can still be friends. I didn't mean to hurt you. Though I didn't vocalize any of these, I did tell him I was sorry at least half a dozen times. My apparent guilt must have given him the mental go-ahead to transform into a total dick by the next weekend. The downward spiral began when he arrived to pick me up. I'd told Dad and Chloe that we were going as friends, so I didn't want them to make a big deal out of it. Naturally, Chloe ignored that entreaty and had the camera charged and ready. "I remember my prom," she said, smiling dreamily into the distance as I thought, "Oh, crap, here we go." "I was a total princess, all the way down to the glass slippers." She put a hand to her mouth like she was about to reveal a secret. "Actually, those shoes were acrylic and uncomfortable as hell." "Ah," I said, attempting to look sympathetic. Chloe blinded us with multiple flashes as Marcus slid a corsage onto my wrist in the entryway. She led us out back and posed us in front of the pool landscaping that made Dad walk around for days with his jaw clenched, mute and furious after he got the bill for all the upgrades she'd authorized. Snapping photos like she had aspirations as a high-fashion photographer, Chloe was oblivious to the ice-cold wall between her subjects. "Marcus, put your arms around her. Like that, but with your hands meeting in the middle. Oh, yes, just like that." I let her get off a few shots before breaking from the false embrace. "Okay, I think that's enough pictures. You know, Marcus might actually like to go to his prom as part of this experience." I hoped Marcus and I would share a knowing look about Chloe, not uncommon for us, so we could begin to salvage the night somewhat before it was entirely wrecked. But he stood, one hand in the trousers of his tux, flicking a fingernail and looking bored, and my sense of foreboding mushroomed. Marcus's arts-heavy prep school is relatively small, with a modest graduating class. Judging by the response his arrival generates, he's clearly one of the in-crowd. The venue is the tented rooftop terrace of the Citizen Hotel, the city's oldest skyscraper. Though the view is only a very familiar Sacramento, it's breathtaking from this height. Distance alters everything. Introducing me to his group of friends by way of, "This is Emma," and a turn of his wrist in my general direction, he doesn't introduce any of them to me. Unbelievably, no one steps forward either. I'm stuck knowing no one's name, except those discovered by eavesdropping on neighboring conversations, so there's nothing to do but stand next to Marcus, my dress and his tux accoutrements so perfectly matched that it leaves no doubt we're here together. Trapped at the receiving end of stares and whispers in a crowd of people where I don't know a single person beyond my asshole of a date, I consider calling a taxi, or Dad, to come pick me up. I can't shake the conviction that I'm getting what I deserve for leading Marcus on, as convincingly as Emily objected to that conclusion. "Marcus doesn't own you," she said after I told her what had happened with Graham in New York and the resulting altercation with Marcus. "I don't see a ring on your finger, not that you'd ever want one from that pompous ass." "I thought you liked him," I said. "Psh," she said, glancing at me as she made a right turn. We were on the way to get our annual almost summer pedicures. "I tolerated him. Derek and I didn't think he was for you." I sputtered before answering, "You and Derek discussed? Hells yeah." She was, as usual, unapologetic. "We hoped it would fade out before you ended up in New York with him leeching onto you. Derek thinks he just wanted you for your film and theater connections. With the bonus of your smoking little bod, of course. I almost spit Berry's smoothie onto her dashboard. God, Em, I feel so cheap. Yeah, well, I'm just glad we didn't have to resort to breaking you guys up. She parked the Sentra and yanked up the brake. You mean you and Derek would have... How many times in this conversation must I say hells yeah? Wouldn't have been that hard, either. You weren't all that attached to him, thankfully. You'd just better hope we like this Graham guy. I leveled a look at her. No. Graham is off-limits. I don't care if the two of you hate him. She smiled and pinched my arm. Now that's more like it. When I come back to Earth, I'm still at Marcus's prom, being pointedly ignored by every person here. Then my focus lands on the other side of the huge indoor-outdoor space. One of the photographers snapping shots of promgoers appears to be aiming his camera in my direction exclusively. I think, paparazzi? Before giving myself a mental shake, feeling silly. Still, I glance around surreptitiously, looking for the other photographers, who are progressing through the crowd, setting up shots of small knots of people talking and laughing, snapping candid shots of couples dancing and teachers chaperoning. Sliding my eyes back to the first photographer, I notice two things. One, his camera is badass in comparison to what the other two are utilizing, and two, he's still aiming every single shot in my direction. I have an uneasy feeling about this. Emily spent 10 minutes scolding me about my recent dumbass decisions. First, trying to placate Marcus by going to his prom, and second, breaking my own rule about checking gossip sites. She's right, of course. I can't unsee the photos of me, alternating between miserable and pissed, standing beside Marcus, being snubbed by everyone at that dance. I can't unread the stories claiming that it was my choice to isolate myself, or the bonus rumors that I'm cheating on Reed Alexander. My best friend stomps back and forth across my room while Derek and I look on silently. Finally, she stops and glares at the laptop screen. What a bunch of jealous pricks! Emily will never be accused of beating around the bush. Marcus's friends or the gossip sites? I'm not sure which infuriates her more. All of them. She's so angry, she's growling. Calm down, baby, Derek says, tugging on her hand as she paces by him. I will not calm down. Stopping suddenly, she slides onto his lap. Derek, please do me a favor. She nuzzles the side of his closely shorn blonde head and his eyes close. Anything. Please beat the shit out of Marcus, except that. Sitting straight up, she folds her arms over her chest and glares at him. What the hell good is having a muscly boyfriend if he won't beat people up for you? I'm glad the text from Reed comes after they've gone. Reed, you went to prom with some other guy? I'm hurt. Me, very funny. Reed, our little act is a success. I've already been contacted for comment. Me, crap. Reed, it would help if we go out to dinner and look happy. Me, I don't think that's a good idea. Reed, sure it is. One happy outing in the face of those stories will put an end to them. Me, you know I'm 400 miles from Los Angeles, right? Reed, I'm visiting a friend in San Fran tomorrow. Drive in, stay over. We'll go somewhere cool. Me, I'm not meeting you in San Francisco, Reed. Reed, fine, I'll come to you. Graham is as supportive as Emily, though far less violence-craving. I should have just backed out of prom, I sigh into my webcam, scrubbing my hands over my face. Marcus wasn't going to be happy no matter what I did, and now the whole world thinks I'm a stuck-up bitch who wouldn't lower herself to speak to regular folks. I'm sure no one believes a word of that. His voice is so warm and soothing that I almost believe him. People do believe it. And do you know the most annoying part? Before now, I was a middle-class non-entity to most of the people from his school. Marcus and I have run into classmates of his several times, and every time I felt exactly like I do when Chloe eyeballs whatever I'm wearing and gears up to mock my entire sense of fashion, or lack of it. He smiles reassuringly. I happen to like your fashion sense. I barely hear him. And what about the rumors that I'm cheating on Reed with Marcus? I'm not dating Reed, but the studio wants everyone to think I am, so of course I'm a cheater if I go out with anyone else. What will that mean when you're here? We'll have to sneak around. If we're caught, I'll look like the biggest slut in Hollywood. He laughs and shakes his head.
Emma, love, you've got a long way to go to win that crown.
I smile goofily at my screen. You called me love. He smirks, chin tucked low, staring at his screen through his lashes.
You okay with that?
Yeah. I stare into his beautiful warm eyes and wish for the 100th time in 2 days that he was standing in front of me. Are you okay with me meeting Reed for dinner? He nods and says,
as okay as I can be.
Which seems cryptic, but I don't push him. I can't expect him to be thrilled about it. Chapter 7. Brooke. This is the part where you'll either start gaining her trust or you'll blow it.
Obviously, Reed hasn't gained my trust. I'm fully expecting him to blow it. Who died and made you all-knowing?
He's barely got the words out before I want to strangle the ability to speak right out of him. I don't know if Reed and I are capable of ever not wanting to rip each other to shreds. That desire lingers right under the surface of every conversation we have. I'm not kidding, Reed. If you touch her or pressure her in any way before I do my part of this, it's over and we're screwed.
Or not, he quips.
Ha, ha. God, I have had just about enough of his horse shit.
Look, I'm not stupid.
He pauses, and I know he's thinking he left that wide open. I would dearly love to deliver the retort he expects, but it's just too easy.
Everything else in my life is boring the shit out of me. This is the only thing remotely stimulating. I'm following your orders because you're the most successfully conniving girl I've ever known. Plus, I can smell how badly you want Graham.
If it wasn't true, how much I want Graham, I'd end this here and now. But Reed makes it sound like wanting him is dirty. It's not. I'm simply ready for something more serious and meaningful than all of the faceless boys and men I've been with in the last few years. None of them were worth half of Graham, and I'm willing to be whatever he wants me to be to get him. What's so wrong about that? I've always been a crap judge of character. Graham was the only exception to that, though the existence of our friendship was all due to him. When I met him, I was reeling from Reed breaking my heart, and I just wanted to hook up. I was bouncing off guys like the shiny silver ball in my father's vintage pinball machine. Ding, ding, ding. I guess Graham could tell that about me. He was one of the few who turned me down, but he didn't run away when my humiliation that any guy would reject me morphed into uber bitch mode. He stuck around and became one of my best friends, something I didn't deserve, and something I've always hoped would grow into more. Graham has this quiet, steady aura about him, and of course I'm drawn to a disposition so completely opposite of mine. I thought we'd balance out like a relationship seesaw. When we both scored roles in school pride, I was sure my chance had come. Close quarters for 3 months, and my very real need for emotional protection from Reed that only Graham could provide. Then he met Emma. At first, I assumed she'd screw him over for Reed. She was obviously not immune to him, and he focused exclusively on her. I remembered all too well how that felt. When Reed and I first met, he flashed those blue eyes at me. Baby blues, because holy shit, he was what, 14 then? And I was a goner. 15 years old, and I was sure I'd met my soulmate, the guy I wanted to spend forever with. God, what a naive idiot I was. Unlike me, though, Emma figured him out. I have to give the girl props. She resisted long enough to witness him doing what he does, and then she dropped his ass. It would have been a joy to behold, if not for Graham. I'd never seen him so crazy infatuated before. Every time we hung out, I made careful plans to seduce him. But all he wanted to talk about was Emma, if he talked instead of brooding over her, which he was more prone to do. I don't think he even noticed my seduction efforts. Now, I'm glad he didn't. Because this time, Those efforts are going to work.
Reed, choosing a restaurant in a city you've never visited is tough. Since Emma lives in Sacramento, I asked her to choose whatever she'd like. This one will do, though not for my calculated purpose of being observed together in the restaurant. The windows are draped, probably thwarting the cozy paparazzi photos Brooke and I were anticipating. For actual intimacy, though, it's ideal. Corner table, flickering candles, semi-tasteful decor, points deducted for the acoustic tile ceiling and likely artificial paneling on a far wall. So, what's the deal with this Marcus character? He seems like an ass. I thought when you dumped me, you were trying to move away from that type. I smile, bumping Emma's arm lightly, and she rolls her eyes. Yeah, well, I guess that's harder to avoid than I thought. She returns my smile, but pulls her forearm away from mine, slowly, putting an ever-so-slight distance between us. I lean back, pretending not to notice her withdrawal while she examines the menu. The waiter, introducing himself as Chad, is so uneasy he's twitching. He also punctuates practically every sentence with either "heh-heh" or "Mr. Alexander." After taking our drink order, he scurries to the back through a set of double doors where the rest of the wait staff congregates. They've all been not so sneakily casting looks our way since we walked in. Typical. A fun fact about celebrity. If you get carded, there's no such thing as a fake ID. They already know your real name. All anyone has to do is hit up IMDb or Wikipedia to get your exact birth date. I rarely get carded, especially in L.A. or New York, or really anywhere we're filming. Most restaurants, bars, and clubs are so freaked at having celebrities show up that they just don't give a crap. Apparently, this place, which passes as upscale for Sacramento, gives a crap. I can't help my reaction, though. When Chad the waiter comes back a few minutes later, all sheepish and asking to see ID for the bottle of wine I ordered. Dude, are you serious? I say, and his face goes scarlet. My manager. He subtly inclines his head towards the back. I'm really sorry, Mr. Alexander. It's okay, Emma says, giving him a reassuring smile. I'll just have water. The breath whooshes out of the poor guy and he looks back at me. I shrug. Yeah, me too. Chad rushes off and I shake my head. I guess I'm not in L.A. anymore, Toto. Emma laughs. No, definitely not. So I heard through the grapevine that you were in New York recently, visiting colleges. Chosen one yet? I'm curious about whether or not she'll ask which grapevine I got that from. What might she think to know it was Graham to Brooke to me? She doesn't take the bait. Either she doesn't see it or she's too smart to pick it up.
I'm leaning towards NYU.
Tish, I nod. Cool.
You know it?
I laughed. You don't have to sound so surprised. I was up to my eyeballs with paying work by the time I got close to finishing my high school coursework. College was never really on my radar, but that doesn't mean I don't know all the major theater programs. You know, just in case. She tilts her head.
In case of what?
That's right, Emma. Follow the crumbs. In case I decide to take my career in a more serious direction at some point. A crease appears on her forehead, and my finger itches to smooth it out.
But I thought you said something about wanting the crazy famous and ton of money route.
Wow. She remembers what I said months ago. Suddenly I'm recalling why I found her so unusual. She's outwardly focused, in a way few people in this business are, including me. I smile. Maybe the critical acclaim is more important to me than I let on. Total lie, of course.
Huh,
she says. And then for some reason, she blushes.
Chapter 8. Graham. Me. Touching down now. I'd call, but I'm afraid of the flight attendant. Emma. LOL, why? Me. She has a mustache and sideburns and perpetual anger. Emma. Be careful. Me. I'm taking my life in my hands to text that I'm only a few hundred miles from you. Emma. Wish I was there now. Me. I want to see you so bad it hurts. The second I hit send, I'm rethinking, too late, that last text. Because how desperate can I seem? It's been so long since I felt this way. No. I've never felt this way. I was lovesick over Zoe, but I didn't rearrange my life in my head to make room for her everywhere. In a matter of, what, less than 2 weeks? Emma has gone from the girl who got away to the girl I see in every moment of my future. I'm starting to enter panic mode and second-think everything when my phone plays its text tone. Emma, me too. And just like that, relief. Muscle flooding, breath releasing, mind calming. Relief. Laughing to myself, I stare out at L.A. as we taxi up to the terminal. I was 16 the last time I felt so jerked around by my own desires. I'm out of practice. I won't see Emma until tomorrow, when she checks into the hotel in L.A., and I'm already craving the sight of her like I used to crave the feel of a cigarette between my fingers, between my lips. Inhaling, exhaling, the nicotine flooding my system and making everything right with the world, 30 seconds in. I definitely shouldn't tell her that thinking of her makes me wish for a cigarette to take the edge off, for the first time in months. Not that I'm sure it would even work. Me. Heads up, seeing you will not be enough. Emma, consider me warned and ready. Emma, OMG, blushing. Me, smiley face. My next text is to Cassie, to let her know I've landed, to ask how Kara's doing. Most of the time she's fine when dropped at her aunt's, but sometimes not. My sister reports that currently, Kara is dancing in front of Caleb's battery-powered swing and eating Cheerios from a cup. My family has been supportive from day one as far as Kara goes. Day one being the day I brought her home. Before that, they were divided. Mom and Bryn on one side and Dad and Cassie on the other. Mom and Bryn were not in favor of me taking custody of Kara. We'd had a family meeting to make the decision, and even though my sisters were both in college and no longer lived at home, they were both given a vote. Mom was tight-lipped, but Bryn was livid.
"Why would you do this to yourself?"
Her hand smacked the pine-planked kitchen table where we all sat, me at the head like the accused.
"She told you she's absolutely not keeping it, thank God, so you're off the hook for 18 years of child support. Let her take care of it in whatever way she sees fit, and go live your life. You're 16, for fuck's sake."
No one said anything. I don't think Dad and Cassie disagreed with her. They just thought I should be given the choice. And I'd made it. I stared at my hands splayed on the table. They weren't as big as my dad's yet. They weren't the hands of a man. They were the hands of a boy. I knew in that moment that I could reclaim my adolescence and walk away from this with my family's full support. My voice was low, but sure. It's my baby. I can't just let her give it away.
"Graham, honey, we can all appreciate your sense of responsibility."
Mom's placating tone annoyed me even more than Bryn's anger had.
"But Zoe is accountable for not protecting herself, too. We didn't know antibiotics would screw up her pill."
"And you weren't using condoms?"
Bryn yelled.
"What the hell were you thinking?"
My face flamed. I was sitting in the kitchen while my entire family discussed my sex life and stared at me like I was the biggest idiot on the planet. Unquestionably the most awkward moment of my life. Dad cleared his throat and everyone waited for his tie-breaking assessment. My father is a man of few words, a trait I inherited. His eyes met those of Mom, Cassie, and Bryn one by one.
"I think Graham's made his decision. And if Zoe agrees with this, we'll have another member of the family and we'll all adjust accordingly."
He turned to me.
"Graham, I want your word that you'll handle this like a man. No running away when it gets hard. No changing your mind later."
I nodded. "I know, Dad." He returned the nod, as though I was an equal, and I sat up straighter.
"Talk to Zoe. Keep us informed. This will all work out."
He offered a half-grin to my mother, who sat stoically across from him.
"It's not like all three of you were planned, after all."
Mom smirked back at him. That was the end of the family meeting. Zoe was convinced she was going to be just like Juno. We told her parents our decision, and since they'd given Zoe everything she wanted since the day she was born, it was easy enough to convince them to go along. There were moments during the next few months when she was pissed and blaming me for talking her into having the baby, like the weeks she spent part of second period in the bathroom, throwing up,
every day. Or when she got a new stretch mark. Or when she realized she gained 40 pounds and the baby wouldn't weigh more than 8. We weren't together, but Ross Stewart was no longer hanging around, which somehow confused Zoe. And I was convinced that part of everything working out would include Zoe and me getting back together. That didn't happen, of course. Once Kara was born, Zoe handed her over, signed the legal papers terminating her parental rights, and went to spend a month in the south of France with her parents. When she returned to New York, she spent several weeks in the Hamptons before heading off to Florida for college. She never called or came by. It was like Kara never happened. Like I never happened.
Emma. Once I've pulled my suitcase across the threshold of my room, I speed dial Graham to tell him my room number. Waiting for him, I pace the length of the suite, door to window, window to door, my stomach in knots and my face as flushed as if I had a fever. As he predicted, we've texted and talked and Skyped for the past 10 days. I know so much more about him than I did a month ago. I didn't know him at all last fall. I only knew the comfort I felt in his presence, as though he'd always been a part of my life, a part of me. Maybe this is how it feels to lose your memory. Only impressions and shadowed inclinations remain, with no factual signals to back them up. A knock sounds at my door, and my heart stops and falls to my knees, starting back up violently as I walk to the door and pull it open. For the barest moment, we stand there drinking each other in, before I take a step backwards into the room and he follows as though there's a cord attached to his chest. The door snaps closed behind him. Every detail about him has sharpened, my brain having played my mental pictures of him over and over. His dark hair is messy and falls over his forehead. His eyes are deep caramel in this late afternoon room, but they'll be black in low light. Slight stubble on his chin and across his jaw. His mouth is set. If I was a stranger to him, I'd think he was angry, but I know he's not. His nostrils flare just the slightest bit, and I back up another step. Is it okay if I lock the door? His voice is so low, and I recognize it as the voice he uses when we're talking late at night. I nod, and he turns to twist the bolt and slam the interior lock home, the sleeve of his black t-shirt drawing back to expose the taut, defined muscles of his upper arm. My mouth goes dry with a longing so strong it makes my breath catch. When he steps towards me, I'm stock still, torn between swaying towards him and taking another step back. His arms slip around me as he bends and buries his face in my neck.
I've missed you.
His voice hums along my collarbone, soaks into my shoulder.
I've missed you too,
I say, my voice a whisper like smoke. He pulls back, his arms still locked at my lower back, and grins.
I've missed you more.
I remember this promise from him as he walked away from me last fall in the airport, after we exchanged goodbyes and I told him I'd miss him. I'll miss you more, he'd said. I give him a mock stern look and flash my eyes to his. I don't believe you. I think you should have to prove a statement like that. His mouth turns up on one side as he stares down at me, that expression so familiar and beautiful it impedes my breath. Oh, he says, one eyebrow angling up. My hands have been inching up his arms, which are tensed and tight around me still. He's not loosened his hold since he slid them around me. I take fistfuls of his sleeves on both sides and revel in the feel of his shoulders, broad and solid and so different from mine that I feel soft and small. Pulling me closer, Graham lifts me onto my toes as his mouth crashes down on mine. The feel of his lips, insistent and giving no quarter, stuns me for a split second. And then I'm matching his movements, opening my mouth, a restrained moan building in my throat as our tongues meet. My hands glide into his hair, the dark strands like ink spilling over my fingers as I urge him closer.
Emma,
he breathes, wrapping one arm around my lower back, his fingers stroking over the skin at my waist as his opposite hand cradles my head. thrusting through the hair at my nape. His touch gentles then, kisses shifting to slow motion, pulling me along like a subtle current, unhurried. Without realizing I've even moved, I feel the mattress pressing into my calves, and he breaks his mouth from mine long enough to lift me onto it, rising over me in the center of the bed. "I just want to kiss you," he murmurs, his lips tracing a path from under my chin to my ear before he rolls onto his back and pulls me across him. My knee is between both of his, anchoring him to the bed as his hands run over my back and my shoulders before framing my face and pulling me down for a long, languid kiss. Capturing his wrists, I mash them into the mattress, my hair falling over my shoulder and tickling along the side of his jaw. "That's all you want? Are you sure?" I ask, brazen in a way I've never been. Because this is Graham, and he's real and here and touching me, not a face on a screen thousands of miles away. He chuckles, his eyes closing as he turns his head and nuzzles my forearm, leaving soft kisses on my wrist, grazing my skin with his teeth and igniting an eruption of goosebumps straight up my arm. His eyes open and he stares at me, all heat. "No, I want everything from you, with you." He turns his hands until they imprison my wrists, curving over me until I'm under him again. "But right now, I'm just going to keep kissing you until you make me stop." If he's waiting for an objection, he isn't going to get one. I lick my lips, a signal for, "Kiss me, please." And he does. Chapter 9. Brooke. I scroll to read and hit talk. Just when I think he's letting it go to voicemail, he says, "Yeah." "Time to bump up the interference," I say. "His flight landed a couple of hours ago, but he's not answering his phone." There's a pause. Reed never looks at his phone before answering, and obviously he's not yet reacquainted with my voice. A rather unreasonable hostility bubbles to the surface, though I suppose I should feel privileged. His skanks don't score his phone number at all. He learned that the hard way, I'm sure. Not that I can talk. I had to change my number half a dozen times before I finally comprehended that hot guys can turn psycho as any girl. "Brooke?" I puff out a sigh. "For Christ's sake, Reed, who do you think it is? And haven't you put me into your contacts yet?"
"Yeah. It just says Satan, though, and I forgot I'd assigned that title to you."
I would dearly love to choke the ever-loving life out of him. "That's very funny. You're hilarious. Can we move on from the juvenile name-calling?"
"Sure, but really, you should consider it a compliment to your level of evil."
"Anyway, I think we should check into the hotel. Recreate the atmosphere from Austin last fall." He laughs once, condescension saturating his tone.
"Because that worked out so well for each of us."
"True, asshole, but beside the point. We weren't working together then. Hello?" He sighs into the phone.
"I'd venture to say that, at least on your end, we were doing the opposite of working together. I might even suggest that one of us was actively engaged in sabotage of the other."
I knew he could hold a grudge, justified or not, but hell's bells. "Okay, fine, I helped screw it up for you. But I couldn't have if you hadn't done most of it to yourself. You could have salvaged it, says you." I grip the phone tighter, bound by my own designs for reconnecting with him in the first place. If he doesn't go along with this scheme, it could prove impossible. Who am I kidding? It will prove impossible. "Reed, if you don't believe me on this, then you won't trust what I tell you to do to get her back, and we might as well give up now, in which case I might just have to kill you."
"Harsh."
"Yeah, well." I don't hear any noise on his end, which strikes me as odd. "Where are you?"
"Driving. Going to pick up a couple of guys, do some clubs.
Do some girls, you mean?"
He barks a laugh. "Hey, I consider tonight my bachelor party. You told me I have to be good once I'm luring Emma into my lair, right? This may be my last night to get laid for a while."
"Classy." I throw his assessment of me back at him.
"Well, you asked, so
You think we need to check into the hotel where everyone else is, even though we both live in L.A.? Proximity to the victims makes sense, I suppose.
Victims? Shit, Reed, talk about harsh. I don't just want to screw Graham, you know.
I guess I don't know, especially considering your M.O.
For half a second, I consider hurling my phone at the wall. Look, I've had it with the snide comments. I'm not any more of a slut than you are, so just lay the hell off. Damn it, there goes my stupid twang. I can be a cold bitch all day long and sound like the perfect L.A. native, but get me actually pissed and I go all Texan, which just pisses me off more. If he mentions it, I swear to God.
Okay, okay. I'll stop.
And Brooke? His voice has turned husky, and the sound of it slams me right in the solar plexus. That accent still gets me hot, damn you. I take a deep breath and shake it off. I'm not playing that game with him. Enjoy your last night of freedom, ha-ha. I'll set up reservations for both of us at the hotel. Our story is that the studio wants us there with everyone else. No one will question it. Text me once you're in tomorrow morning and we'll review strategy. You remember morning, right? That brightish space of time between 8 and noon when you're usually sleeping off a hangover?
I'm saluting, in case you're wondering.
I imagine clearly the exact gesture he's making. Put your middle finger down, asshat, before someone thinks you're flipping them off and drives your ass off the road. I need you.
No comment.
None expected.
Graham, it's been a long time since I've been this content. Not that I don't want more, because God, I do. But I'm not desperate enough to forsake the need to hold her close, to feel her heartbeat against me, to require nothing more than the exquisite fusing of our mouths and the stroke of our fingers over each other. We lie entwined in the center of the bed, spent from a couple of hours of kissing that set fire to every emotion I've ever felt for this girl. I know she can tell that I've held myself in check a couple of times, physically. A small crease appears on her forehead, or she affects a marginal withdrawal of her own. I hope she knows there's no need for her to worry. As much as I want her, I've been falling in love with her for months, and sleeping with someone you're in love with shifts everything to a more complex level. I can't go there alone. I have to know she's going with me. As if sensing my heavy thoughts, she turns her face up from my shoulder and stares into my eyes, silent. My fingertips continue caressing her arm, up and over her shoulder, down her back, and I shamelessly examine the distinctive facets of her gray-green eyes, savoring the unguarded way she allows me to study her. My head tells me it's far too soon to tell her everything my heart wants me to blurt out. The last thing I want to do is scare her away. I'll take as long as she needs, be more patient than I've ever been, if it means she'll be mine in the end. I'm not afraid of my own feelings. I'm only afraid of misjudging hers. The words lay on my tongue, unspoken, waiting. My fingers have wandered up her back, rising and falling over each tiny arch of vertebrae until I reach her neck. Shifting, I lean over her and kiss her gently. My lips are sore, and I know hers must be too, though I've tried to use restraint. I smile now, knowing that any restraint I've employed didn't last long. I've practically devoured her for the past 2 hours. From the bedside table, our phones have beeped and buzzed a couple of times each, but neither of us made any move towards them. "What are you smiling about?" she asks, her voice rasping between regular speech and a whisper, a tentative answering smile on her red, red mouth. "I was thinking about how sore my lips are, and wondering if yours are too." She nods, her smile expanding. "I don't think I can feel them." "Can you feel this?" I ask, leaning closer to run my tongue over her swollen lower lip, dipping inside her mouth when she opens with a sigh. "Mm-hmm," she says, raising her hand to my face and holding me just so, mirroring my effort. When her small tongue slips inside my mouth, I release a moan that sounds more like a growl, and then I'm rattling off baseball statistics and diagramming sentences in my head. I was so sure last semester's advanced structures of modern English would never come to any practical use. Maybe...
My voice breaks and I clear my throat. Maybe we should get dinner or something.
She blinks. I'm glad to see she's as affected as I am.
Room service in a movie?
She gestures to the television, reading my mind.
Sounds perfect.
I don't want to leave this room. Well, I mean, not until I have to.
Would you want to sleep here?
Her eyes fall, watching her own hand where it lays on my chest, rising and falling with every breath I take. My heartbeat accelerates with her words. She must feel it pounding under her palm.
We only have a couple of days, and I'll probably fall asleep if we're up late.
She doesn't mention the biggest impediment, the fact that thanks to the ruse she and Reed are perpetrating, she and I can't be demonstrative in public. Her room and mine are like private islands, the only places we'll be safe to touch unguardedly.
And you want me here when you wake up?
She nods, and I kiss her carefully.
I would love to stay with you tonight, Emma.
Tipping her chin up, I look into her eyes, and I'm not taking that as an invitation for anything other than sleeping next to you. After dinner, I walk to my room to grab a toothbrush and clean stuff to wear tomorrow, checking my phone messages on the way. No calls from home, but one missed call and a text from Brooke. Basic, hi babe, are you here yet stuff. Texting back that I'm all checked in, I tell her I'm going to bed early, using the 3-hour time difference as an excuse for my exhaustion. True to her word, Emma's out cold before the second movie is over. Cuddled up against my side, she sleeps on her stomach, a pillow flattened under her face and chest, one of her knees drawn up against my thigh and the other sprawled behind her. I grin and shake my head that such a small person can take up so much of a queen-sized bed. Her face angled towards me, her lashes lay across her creamy skin, and her lips are parted slightly. And they actually do look a little puffy. That thought has me contemplating noun phrases, Emma's lips, and verb phrases, are swollen, and prepositional phrases, from hours of kissing, which does absolutely nothing to help me. When a groan escapes me, Emma moans softly in response, shifting without waking, her arms stealing across my abdomen. Oh man, I am never getting to sleep. Still, I wouldn't trade the feeling of holding her like this for anything. It's midnight in L.A., 3 a.m. New York time, and I'm staring at the swirling patterns on the ceiling, trying to concentrate on anything but my t-shirt loosely bunched in Emma's fist. A few minutes later, or half an hour, she stretches, pulling my shirt askew at the same time. When I glance down, she's awake. Sort of. A drowsy, slowly blinking stage of awake.
Hi.
She whispers.
Hey,
I whisper back. My arm has gone to sleep under her head, so I'm grateful when she moves to lay her face on my chest.
Checking for a heartbeat?
I ask, stretching my arms out, returning one to pull her closer and tucking the other behind my head so I can see her more clearly. Her eyes go to my bicep, and I feel like an idiot boy wanting to flex it and be impressive. She props herself on her forearms, chin on her hands, and stares at me.
I can't believe how comfortable I feel, she says, a confused note in her confession. How do you do that?
I raise an eyebrow, equally confused.
How do I do what?
She breathes out a sigh, her fingers scraping over the underside of my jaw.
Make me feel like I can trust you with everything. I haven't felt like that in so long with anyone. I'm always afraid of being left. I always hold something back.
I shrug. You're cautious. Maybe losing your mother did that to you. Her fingers still on my chin, she's quiet for a moment before saying,
Maybe so. Thank you for trusting me, Emma. I'll be worthy of it, I swear.
In my ears, this seems a too solemn promise, but somehow it seems necessary in this moment. She doesn't reply beyond another sigh. Running my hands over her, I spread her hair across my chest, fingertips trailing the sides of her face, hands kneading her shoulders and folding over her like a blanket. I have no problem falling asleep this time, with her locked in my arms. Chapter 10. Reed. Damn Brooke and her hangover comments. I'd say she knows me well, but I'm no different than any other 18 to 25 in L.A., especially the celebrity subset. I suspect she's the same. She just likes being high-handed with me. Her orders, texted to me last night, check into the hotel by 10. The cars are picking everyone up at 11:30. Look hot. Don't flirt. Be friendly and sweet. Make her think you've forgotten about her rejection. Rejection. Way to twist the knife there, Brooke. Almost as if she doesn't know she's doing it. Damn, she's good. I checked into the hotel at 11:15, after not bothering to answer her texts and calls all morning. She's got to get one thing straight. I'll follow her dictates to a point, but only to a point. I don't trust her enough to blindly obey everything she says, and I'm not stupid enough to ignore the fact that she'll hit her goal first. For Emma to fall into my arms, Graham has to fall into Brooke's. And I have no illusions about how much help Brooke will be to me once she gets what she wants. I'll be on my own. After checking into my suite, I text Brooke, "I'm here." The lobby is one big Austin deja vu, and after I step off the elevator, I stop to observe the interaction of my former co-stars before joining them. Tad spots me first. "Reed, you've got to come to Chicago and hang out." He walks over and we exchange a fierce hug. "My new place is awesome. Penthouse right on the river. Oprah's just down the street." "I'm sure you'll be painting each other's toenails in no time, man," I laugh. "So, what's up?" He tosses his straight, pale blonde hair out of his eyes, his clear blue eyes flicking to Emma and back. "Not yet, dude. I'm getting there, though." Both eyebrows rise now. "Interesting." My eyes trace over Emma. She stands a foot from Graham, nothing outwardly betraying anything between them, though an alert observer would say the way they seem to avoid touch or eye contact is conspicuous. The studio wants us to maintain an illusory thing until the film's released. I want less illusory and more thing. He says. "A warning, then." Shoulder to shoulder, we stand watching everyone else. There's a little, I don't know, chemistry going on between her and Graham. No need to fake ignorance with Tad. He's had my back too many times to count. He likes Emma, but I'm sure he'd come down on my side if it came to that. "Yeah, I've been made aware." He smirks through the fringe of hair that falls right back down over one eye, a look that probably gets him whatever guy he wants, whenever he wants it. "By who?" he asks, and I glance in Brooke's direction. She's deliberately snubbing me. Still pissed that I ignored her texted commands, I'm sure. "Really?" Tad's eyes widen. "More interesting."
Emma. Remaining hands-off with Graham is more difficult than I expected. I'm drawn to him, as though there's some sort of gravitational attraction tethering us to each other. I want to press myself into his side. I want him to slide his arms around me like he did last night as we slept. I want to run my hands over him like I did an hour ago in my room, pushing his shirt up and counting his abdominal muscles out loud while he laughed, self-conscious and proud at the same time. "This belongs to me," I thought, touching his hard stomach and biceps, kissing his mouth, "and this, and this." When I woke up in his arms this morning, I spent 5 minutes staring at his flawless, sleeping face. The world had tilted overnight, and everything had fallen into place. I slipped carefully from his grasp and tiptoed to the bathroom to brush my teeth, and when I came back and snuggled against him, he came slowly awake, kissed the top of my head, and excused himself. When he came back to bed and kissed me, his minty breath echoed mine. I giggled when he rolled me flat on my back and smiled. "Good morning," he said, mischief in his eyes. "Do I snore, or talk in my sleep, or drool, or something worse?" I asked. He laughed. "Not that I know of. As far as I know, you're perfect." Turning my head back and forth, I stared up at him. "No, I'm not." Intertwining our fingers, he pushed my arms above my head, holding me prisoner. A bolt of pure liquid fire shot through me and pooled where our bodies pressed together. "Oh, yes, you are," he said, kissing me. By the time he left the room and I got into the shower, I had only half an hour to get ready. My hair is wavy and damp now because I didn't have time to dry it, let alone style it. Emma! Brooke snatches my attention back to the lobby and my co-stars. She arches a flawless brow as her eyes dart over my hair. You could have borrowed my flat iron if you needed one. I owe you, as I recall. As was her intent, I'm reminded of the night she borrowed my straightener in Austin when Reed took me out to dinner and I thought I was falling for him. I glance over at him, and he smiles like he knows exactly what night I'm thinking about. Sliding his eyes away, he greets Meredith and Michonne. He must be over our breakup last fall, and our exchange in Austin just a few weeks ago, when he said, I could be different with you, and I refused to be that girl. This is the third time we've seen each other since then, and he doesn't seem at all resentful. He hasn't really flirted with me either. Not any more than he does with everyone. Maybe the coming month won't be so bad. When I turn back to Brooke, she's staring at Graham as he listens to Quentin relate some amusing story in his usual animated manner. Graham laughs, arms crossed loosely over his chest, and Brooke's eyes roam over him in a way that makes me want to stomp on her foot. She and Graham have been close for years. He says she's never been more than a friend, and there's no reason for me to distrust that. I can't tell Graham who to keep as friends. I wouldn't accept any guy doing that to me. Despite all of these reasons, I don't think I'll ever be relaxed around her. Not when she's looking at him like he's a steak and she's starving. I clear my throat and her ice-blue eyes snap to me. There's no guilt in them, but maybe she's just incapable of feeling any. I remind myself that she was sympathetic, even supportive, when everything blew up in my face with Reed. How've you been, Brooke? She's a couple of inches taller than me, plus she's wearing spiked heels. A true L.A. girl. Not for the first time, she reminds me of my stepmother. Her smile is pretty and calculated, like a magazine cover. Very well, actually. I've got a little rom-com thing lined up for the end of the summer, and my agent's gathered new scripts for me to look at after that's done. How about you? I'm sure she and I discussed the fact that I'm going to college in the fall, but people seldom remember personally unimportant things. Although, Reed remembered. I decided on going to college. I'm starting this fall. She laughs in that throaty way some girls do that attracts all male attention within hearing distance. Oh, that's right. Personally, I wouldn't want to back up and do college now, but I forget how young you are. Graham hears this last bit, and his lips flatten just barely. What the hell does she mean by how young you are? She seems to be ridiculing my age in relation to her own. Or Graham. But I don't know if he's even told her anything about us. As new as this all is, we haven't discussed who to tell or when. Emily and Dad know, of course. And Chloe by association. Graham's sister knows, and possibly the rest of his family. They're both staring at me, and I realize I zoned out. Oh, I'm sorry. What? Looks like someone didn't get much sleep last night. Brooke's grin is full of comprehension, and my eyes flick to Graham, who shakes his head almost imperceptibly. Whatever he's told her didn't include where he spent the night. What exactly is she assuming I was doing? And with who? My face burns as I scramble for something to say. Hey, baby! Michonne says, touching my arm. I smile and turn to hug her, grateful for the interruption. I hear you're going off to college in the fall? Yes, I am, in New York. That's awesome. I expect to see you on Broadway in no time, headlining, dating some hot leading man, or maybe some sugar daddy Wall Street type. My glance bounces off Graham's. Judging by the semi-smirk of his lips, he's amused. When he catches me staring at his mouth, his eyes heat and I have to look away. So, Michonne, are you still visiting Austin occasionally? I ask with a conspiratorial smile, and she waggles her brows. I'm actually considering a permanent relocation there, she says, tapping her chin with the index finger of her left hand. Oh my God, Miss Sean! Is that an engagement ring? Brooke grabs her hand and squeals as though she's just won a beauty pageant and the rhinestone-studded crown to go with it. Michonne's ring finger sports a near-flawless marquee-cut solitaire. I know this because Chloe dragged me along to shop for a 10th anniversary gift Dad didn't know he was giving. After hours of babbling cut-color-clarity basics, she found the perfect diamond, and then pouted until he bought it. I borrowed blood diamond from Emily that weekend, but Chloe totally missed the insult. What a depressing movie, she commented, yawning as she left in the middle of it to take a bubble bath. Nice try, Dad smirked at me. This settles it. We're all going out after the shoot is over tomorrow night. We have to celebrate. Brooke beams at her. Graham and I glance at each other. Tomorrow night is our last night together until the premiere. And it appears we'll be spending the evening in a group, out in public. Crap.
Chapter 11. Graham. The first shoot is in the studio. The layout, a stylized schoolroom. Everyone is made up, hair is runway model styled, and the clothes are exclusive labels, fitted to us with pins and clips. If people got a 360-degree view of us, we'd all look a hell of a lot sillier. Like the shoot in Austin, the majority of pics are Reed and Emma, separate or together. Emma's hair is teased and coiffed, and I can tell by the set of her mouth and the way she holds her head that she hates it. Her eyes are darkly lined and shadowed, her lips filled in, and she looks closer to 28 than 18. I know she hates this, too, though she looks beautiful. Not as beautiful as she did this morning when I woke up to her face snuggling against my chest, but beautiful in a different way. Aggressively sexy. The photographer has her biting on the string of pearls around her neck, invoking the memory of her nipping my earlobe last night. I've never in my life gone over so many sports statistics in my head so frequently. I didn't know I knew so many sports statistics. Batting averages for Jose Reyes become unnecessary mental fodder a few minutes later, when Reed joins Emma and I'm trying to psych myself for the positions in which they're about to be placed. They've put him in a navy pinstripe suit, crisp white shirt and loose red tie. Next to him, Emma's outfit is an elegant compliment, a very short, very tight, strapless red dress, which she hitches up at the bodice between shots until the photographer's assistant pins it tighter down her back. Why do photographers insist on putting her in his lap? The guy from Vanity Fair had her wrapping her legs around him, though her posture screamed how uncomfortable she was doing it. Now she perches on his thighs with his hands splayed at her waist, and then he leans her back like he's about to kiss her. My entire body is rigid with irritation. The audible photographer instructions would negate that if I wasn't imagining, if I didn't know that they'd done this before, in private. All illusions that I'm keeping these deliberations under control are shattered when Brooke leans closer, her brow knit, and whispers, "You okay?" I nod, failing at pretending to be unconcerned as Reed pulls Emma up and turns her so that she's facing out from him, her legs straddling one of his. His arms are wrapped around her, his head on her bare shoulder, their faces jammed together as the photographer hops around, babbling words like sexy and hot and baby. Is this photo shoot for a PG-13 movie or an ad for high-priced escort services? Emma's eyes find me and her gaze immediately falls to my thigh, where Brooke's hand sits. She stares, puzzled, her brows furrowing until the photographer asks her in an annoyed whine why she's frowning, and she retches her eyes from my leg. I'm smoldering from my head to my toes, watching Reed's hands move over her body like they belong there, and she's annoyed that Brooke's hand sits passively on my leg. I suppose one could argue that there's no photographer ordering the placement of Brooke's hand. Removing it to her own knee, I shoot up and walk to the back corner where bottles of water and snacks are located. Grabbing a bottle and twisting the cap from it, I wish I could just pour it over my head. It's not that I don't trust her. I don't trust him. And I don't trust his history with her. "Hey," Brooke says, appearing next to me, one hand on my back, stroking down.
I take a deep breath, her touch calming me. What's the matter? I shake my head and laugh once, turning and looking down at her with a grim smile. Nothing out of the ordinary. I just really hate photo shoots. The makeup, the crap in my hair, the clothes. I gesture to the black suit that screams either church or funeral, depending on your mood. Anyone could guess mine right now. At least Brooke certainly can. I hope it's because she's known me for so long and not because I'm so ridiculously transparent. She tilts her head to the side a bit, glancing back at Emma and Reed. I don't follow her gaze. I'm still just trying to breathe while Reed Alexander practically makes out with my girlfriend in the live version of photos millions of people will see. Many of those people already think they make an attractive couple. Against all better judgment, I glance towards them and get confirmation of this fact. They're both beautiful. Of course they look good together. How could they not?
Is there something going on between you and Emma? Brooke asks, her L.A. smile, as I call it, firmly in place.
Why do you ask? I hedge, and she does that low laugh thing, still smiling up at me.
I don't think I've ever seen jealous Graham before. She squeezes my bicep and arches a brow. Very alpha male.
When I scowl, she laughs at me again, and I take a deep breath, feeling years less mature. God, am I that obvious? I start to run a hand through my hair, but can't. The styling for the shoot looks better than my Bill Collins helmet do during filming, but it doesn't matter. Either way, it's untouchable.
Ugh, I say, and Brooke laughs again. So, you and Emma, huh?
She selects a Perrier from the ice bucket and fingers through the snacks, choosing nothing.
How long has this been going on?
I shake my head once.
Not long.
The photographer calls us for group shots, and I'm happy to end this conversation. Talking to Brooke has had a dual effect. I'm less tense, but instantly worried by the jealousy accusation.
Alpha male? Good God, no.
Mom and Bryn would lecture me until my ears rang. Possessive men are at the top of their lists of to-be-scorned things.
A self-possessed man is what a psychologically healthy woman wants, preaches my mother, the psychologist. Not some guy who dispenses orders and punishment, whether physical or emotional, and distrusts her every move.
She brought home enough codependent client stories, a few complete with stalking, two of which turned criminal, to scare my sisters away from those type of guys and scare me away from that type of girl. The type who wants, needs, the jealous boyfriend to prove she has worth. My eyes are on Emma as she talks and laughs with Jenna and Michonne, and I know she's not in that category. Compromising and generous, yes. Forgiving, too, I think, watching as Reed moves near her and joins the conversation. Her response to being held too tightly would be a quick exit. Her eyes swing to meet mine, and everything in me snaps and sings with pleasure. A slow burn begins at my core, and I know it will build until we're alone in her room again, the rest of the world shut out. There's a line at the edge of possessive, and she makes me want to walk it. This 3-second glance between us reinforces what I know. I love her. Everything else, the ins and outs of my feelings and hers in conjunction with what it all means, can be deciphered in due time. I love her. That's all that matters. And in this moment, that's all I am.
Brooke. Well, shit. This is more serious than I thought. He may actually believe he's in love with her. I've put far too many years into this relationship to lose him like this. To her. I care about Graham deeply. But if he pairs up with Emma, what we have will be over. For some reason, I know this. My intuition is screaming it at me, that I'm losing him. I could be what he wants. I could be sweeter and softer with him. Not so hard. God, I'm tired of being so uncompromisingly hard all the time. If I backpedal and stop this now, linger forever off to the side as his friend and confidant, I could convince Emma that I'm not a threat. I could hold on to his friendship, which means more to me than he'll ever know. But no. Friendship isn't enough. I want him. All of him. He's exactly the type of guy I need, and all I have to do is get Emma out of the way and convince Graham that I can be what he needs. Somewhere between Reed and myself, there's enough deviousness to pull this off. And if this has to be an all-or-nothing battle, then so be it. No time to be squeamish. I've lied my ass off for worse causes than landing the perfect guy. Chapter 12. Emma. Getting out of that tiny dress and the 5,000 pins they used to fit it to me like a glove took forever, so I'm the last one out of the studio. Three black cars idle at the curb, waiting to transport the 9 of us to the hotel. Brooke climbs into the first car behind Tad, and I'm both relieved and annoyed at myself for being relieved that Graham isn't with her. Brooke is a force of nature. The last thing any sane girl would want is to get into a tug-of-war with her over a guy. Graham says they're just friends, and I have to trust him if this is going to work. No matter how beautiful she is, no matter how familiar her casual touches seem to be, no matter how many times I catch her looking at him like he's on her room service menu. As I'm standing near the last car, scanning for Graham as covertly as possible, someone says, "Psst." I bite my lip to stifle a yelp when Graham snakes an arm around my waist and drags me into the car. Michonne, chatting with Jenna a few feet away, raises an eyebrow as I disappear into the back seat, backwards. She bends to see who's snatched me off the sidewalk. When she spots Graham, her wide eyes tell me I can expect to be quizzed about this later. "Graham," I hiss, laughing. "You just made me look like that hapless character in every horror film who's dumb enough to stand right next to the darkened basement doorway." Grinning mischievously, he kisses the back of my neck, withdrawing his arm before anyone else sees. Thank God for opaque windows. "So you're the expendable cheerleader and I'm the demon, or werewolf? Or the mentally unbalanced guy with the chainsaw, yeah." Aware that I'll have to sit up straight and keep my hands to myself once someone joins us, I press back against him for a moment, leaning my head onto his shoulder and tracing the top of his hand with my fingers. "I was wondering if you'd want to check out Griffith Park in the morning." His question is a breath in my ear as Jenna moves to stand by the open door, still talking to Michonne. He flips his hand over and my index finger maps the lines of his palm. "We'd have to go early to get back in time to leave for the second shoot." I nod. "I've been to Griffith, but not for years. My family used to go hiking there." My memories of hiking in Griffith have been augmented with photos my parents took there when I was very young. Some are from weeks, days perhaps, before Mom began to get sick. To be honest, I'm not sure if my memories of Griffith Park, or my mother, are genuine. Almost every clear recollection I have of her was caught on film. Perhaps the real memories faded away long ago, supplanted by the unchanging photographs. "If you climb high enough, you can see all of Hollywood," I say, "and the sign." My childhood scrapbook contains a series of photos Mom took of me near my birthday every year, standing in the same exact spot on some unspecified trail of Griffith. In each of these, the Hollywood sign is stark white against the hill in the background, my own personal growth chart. In the last one, I'd turned 6. Her quick downward spiral didn't allow her to return, and Dad either forgot the tradition or didn't have the heart to keep it up. "That's what I read. Sounds cool. I'll rent a car and have it brought around at, say, 5:30. We can pack coffee thermoses and catch the sunrise." He takes my hand in his, fingers stroking the back of my arm. His eyes catch and hold mine. "Unless it would be too painful for you to go there." I shake my head, twisting my mother's ring around and around on my finger. "No, I'd like to go with you." When Jenna starts to get in, I straighten from leaning against Graham, my hands folding primly in my lap. I feel more than hear him chuckle at my suddenly proper posture. Just before Jenna sits down, I hear Reed's voice. "Hey, Jenna, Brooke wants you to ride with her. Want to switch?"
"Oh, okay, sure."
I'm wondering at the oddity of Reed delivering a message for Brooke as he slides in next to me. Graham's thigh tenses against mine.
"Hey," Reed says, sticking a hand out to Graham. "How are you doing, man?"
"Good."
Graham answers, reaching over. I sit for 2 surreal seconds with their hands clasped just above my lap, tension radiating from them both, though neither one's expression betrays it. Swinging his hair from his eyes, Reed glances at me and winks before returning his attention to Graham. His knee presses against mine as he leans forward. Got any new projects lined up? My face warms as Graham's fist clenches and unclenches once before settling on his leg. Not right now. I'm finishing up my last semester at Columbia. You? Nothing till fall, just trying to get into decent shape before then. I'm supposed to do some of my own stunts in the next flick. Hopefully the ones that won't kill me. One side of his mouth turns up and he glances at me again. Cool, Graham says. Reed clears his throat, looks back at Graham. So, theater degree? English lit. Ah. Having reached the end of conversable topics, Reed sits back and they both fall silent while I sit mutely between them, contemplating how the hell I got myself into this incredibly awkward position. When we reach the hotel, Reed slips out, turning and offering his hand. Without thinking, I take it. Pulling me alongside him, he places his opposite palm at my lower back as he smiles for the paparazzi gathered around the entrance while our bodyguards ensure that we get to the door unmolested. I have no chance to look back for Graham until we reach the lobby, at which point Reed drops his hand from my back. We're all meeting in my room in a little while. You're coming, right? Before I reply, he turns and looks past Graham, whose eyes connect with mine. Our hours to be alone are dwindling down. Brooke walks up behind Graham, her hand coming to rest on his arm, arguably unintentional if she didn't do it so habitually. Hey, she says. Brooke, you told Emma and Graham about tonight, right? Reed asks. No trace of the hostility, let alone the desire to maim each other permanently, that usually colors every word they say to each other. Graham appears as astonished as I am at this friendly exchange, especially when Brooke replies, Oh, shit, I forgot, without biting Reed's head off first. Linking her arm with Graham's, she smiles up at him, her perfect faux tan and red-nailed talons standing out against his paler skin. Mixer in Reed's room. You have to come. She turns her toothpaste ad smile on me, saying, Oh, and you too, Emma. Like an afterthought. The desire to stomp on her foot returns, 100 times stronger than it was this morning. Worse, her calculating smile says she's more than aware of it.
Reed. Watching Brooke and Emma face off is possibly the most involuntarily hot thing I've ever witnessed. They're subtle and perfectly civil to each other, while under the surface lurks a biting, kicking, hair-pulling, bitch-slapping violence. The only thing that would have made it better, much better in fact, is if I was the inspiration for those vicious feelings. But no. It's all for Graham. I sort of get it. I mean, he's good-looking, and he's got that mysterious element about him that chicks are drawn to. I know his protectiveness is attractive to Brooke. When she and I were together and I got the slightest bit possessive of her, which, granted, has never come naturally for me, she loved it. In fact, the more jealous I was, the more controlling I acted, the more she liked it. Kind of freaked me out a little, actually. You're flirting with her too much in front of Graham. Brooke walks through my door a quarter hour early, issuing unrequested critiques of my progress. If you make him jealous before anything happens between Graham and me, you'll never get her away from him. I smirk. Thanks for the vote of confidence, and that's not what happened last time. She turns, arms crossed under her breasts and wearing her patented I-know-better-than-you expression, stopping when her eyes flick over my bare chest. I haven't yet buttoned the shirt I threw on after my shower. Clearing her throat and averting her eyes to anything in the room but me, she retorts, Last time he was fighting falling for her. Now he's not. The only way he'll give her up is if she falls into bed with you. And since you were a big fail on that last fall, before she even knew what a man whore you are, I think we can safely assume that isn't going to happen easily. I take a slow breath. No way am I letting her know how much I want to test the challenge she just threw down, just because she tossed it at me. She's probably correct, though. Neither of them is going to cave easily. Shit, Brooke, if you think it's so impossible, why bother? She glares at me. I told you I want him. I'm right for him, and it's not impossible. It's just going to take shrewd planning and careful execution, and I don't want you screwing it up. The combination of a hot ex-lover alone in my room and the cleavage-flaunting way her arms are crossed is killing me. With effort, I cut my eyes away from her heaving chest and deceptively flawless face and pour a shot of whatever the hell is sitting on my dresser. How much attention have you been paying to following your own orders, Brooke? Emma has definitely noticed the fact that you can't keep your hands off him. As far as condemning your